Chapter 48. Hurst studied the iPad on his lap. "Turn right ahead," he said. He was in the front passenger seat of a white BMW SUV that was being driven by Jimmy the Para. Jimmy was in his 40s and had done 15 years with the Paras, including spells in Afghanistan and Iraq. He was a chain smoker and stank of stale tobacco, and his teeth were a yellowish brown. He was a little over 6 feet tall and broad-shouldered, probably too big to have ever made it to the SAS, but the perfect build for a para. He was taciturn, which suited Hurst, and as Barrett had said, he had a Kalashnikov and several magazines. Hurst had checked the weapon, and it had clearly been well cared for. Jimmy was also well presented, wearing a black leather jacket over a blue sweater, dark jeans, and brown boots. Sitting in the back of the vehicle were the two former Ranger Wing soldiers. Sean O'Rourke was from Dublin. Pat Walsh was from the opposite side of the country, Galway. O'Rourke was in his late 30s. Walsh was about 5 years younger. In Hurst's experience, Irish Special Forces weren't that special. Hardly surprising when the Ranger Wing could only draw on a military population of fewer than 9,000 men. But O'Rourke and Walsh seemed to know their stuff. They both had Glocks in underarm holsters, and Hurst had transferred 3 HK416 carbines from his Outlander to the BMW. The former Rangers had a nylon bag containing HK MP5s and 9mm ammunition, but Hurst figured they were underpowered for the job they had to do, so he planned to give them to the junior members of the crew. All three of the men claimed familiarity with the 416. Though Jimmy had made it clear he wanted to stick with his Kalashnikov. They had listened as Hurst outlined what he planned to do, and they hadn't expressed any reservations about what was expected of them. Jimmy made the turn, and Hurst scanned the sides of the road. He saw the Ford Explorer first, and then the Volkswagen. He pointed the vehicles out. "They'll be in one of the houses close by, but there's no way of knowing which," he said. "Find somewhere to park that gives us a decent view of the cars." Jimmy found a parking space and reversed into it. "Now what?" asked O'Rourke. "All we can do is wait," said Hurst. "That's all well and good, but 4 grown men sitting in a car for hours is going to look suspicious, isn't it?" Hurst nodded. "Any thoughts how we could be less conspicuous?" O'Rourke grimaced. "This time of night, we don't have many options, do we?" "Not really," said Hurst. "Maybe we walk around. That might attract attention too. And we can hardly walk around with the guns." "I'm thinking home invasion," said O'Rourke. He gestured at the line of houses to his left. "We pick a ground floor flat with a view of the vehicles and we move in. There'll be 1 or 2 bedroom places, so I reckon we'd be unlucky to get more than 2 occupants. We tie them up and settle down for the night." Hurst nodded. "That should work. What do you think, guys?" In the SAS, it was traditional to talk through an operation at the planning stage and give every member of the team a chance to throw in ideas and suggestions and express any reservations up front. It was referred to as Chinese Parliament and was a way of building team spirit.
"Sounds good," said Walsh.
"I don't want witnesses blabbing to 5-0, said Jimmy.
"We just make sure our faces are covered," said Hurst. "We can tie, gag, and blindfold them. It's no biggie." The three men nodded in agreement.
"Right, let's get it done," Hurst said.